Welcome to the Hunger for Change podcast, the place where we untangle the mysteries of health and challenge long-standing myths. I'm your host, Niklas Gustafsson, and today I'm excited to introduce you to a remarkable guest, Lexi Joy. Lexi is not your typical corporate health coach. She's a trailblazer, the founder of Nutrition Intuition, and an educational content creator. With a master's degree in human nutrition from Drexel University and certification as a health coach from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, Lexi brings a wealth of knowledge to the table. Her expertise spans diet optimization, oral wealth, nasal breathing, weight management, and intuitive eating. For the five past years, Lexi has been on a mission, providing invaluable corporate health coaching and educating organizations on nutrition, health, and wellness. Her passion for empowering individuals to take control over their well-being is truly inspiring. Join us as we embark on an interesting journey into the latest breakthroughs in health, offering fresh insights that will reshape your understanding of the human body. Welcome to the podcast, Lexi.
Thank you, Niklas. Thank you.
How are you today?
Well, I swam in the Mediterranean. I'm feeling pretty good. There's salt in my hair, so
great.
Happy.
Sounds wonderful. So, Lexi, first of all, what does health mean to you?
Yeah, it's almost like a picture is worth a thousand words. I don't think there's like one single way to look at health because it means like too much to me. It's not just about food or exercise. It's about like your entire life, even your interactions with other people, how your mind is, like what your state of mind is. So I apologize for my voice. I'm just getting over a cold.
Really?
Yeah. And to be honest, like my opinion of health, like it evolved.
Yeah.
And even my opinion on diet, which we'll get into.
Yeah, I agree. It's the same in my case. It changes all the time. It evolves, right? So I understand that you are in Lebanon now. Is that true?
Yes. So it's like a 40-minute, it's about 40 minutes north of Beirut in Lebanon. Yeah. That's where I am currently.
I was actually close a few days ago. I was in, we were in Tel Aviv, and then we drove to Jerusalem and then to the south. So you're just north, right?
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It looked so fun.
You did? Okay. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, we're just north of you, neighbors.
Yeah, yeah. And I really enjoyed the food there. What about, but wait a second. So you're based in Lebanon, but also in the U.S.? Is that it?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Right now.
Yeah,
I don't
where
really
in
have
the U.S.?
To return to the U.S. at the moment. So I've lived like in New York City. That's kind of what made me get into health because I was working in fashion for 10 years and it was very stressful. So that made me pursue a career in health. And then I moved to Pennsylvania and, you know, I'm kind of just like all over the place now. But yeah, you said you were in the U.S. as well at one point.
I never lived there. I've just been there for, on vacation.
Okay. But you're based where in Spain?
I'm based in Spain. I'm originally from Sweden, but I've been based in Spain the last 25 years now in Madrid.
Yeah. So we're probably eating similar foods like olive oil and...
Yeah. I mean, similar, yes. But I realized that where you're based, at least in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, it was different from where I am. I mean, the food itself, the ingredients are very similar, but the way you prepare everything is so different. In Spain, we don't use that much fresh herbs, for example. And I realized that you use a lot of fresh herbs, for example. That's an example.
Yes. There's herbs that I don't even know what the English word is for, and I don't even know if we have them in America.
Yeah.
They're so good. You put them in a salad, and like it makes the salad taste amazing.
Totally. Yeah. And even in the mornings, to make tea of those fresh herbs, I found that so inspiring because in Spain, you don't really use fresh herbs for making your own tea. In Morocco, you do, which Morocco is just south of Spain, you know? So, but yeah, I really find the the thing with the Mediterranean diet as a whole, I think it's very interesting because a lot of people, especially from north of Europe, they are so impressed by the Mediterranean diet. And I think they have the wrong, there is kind of a misunderstanding, I think, because the Mediterranean diet, as it was like maybe 10,000 years ago, there was something so different from what it is now.
Oh,
Now,
you mean like the American definition of the Mediterranean diet?
maybe the American or the North European definition, they think that Mediterranean diet is, I mean, the healthiest you can find. And maybe it was, but I don't think it is anymore because at least in Spain, Italy, it's based on grains, legumes, very highly processed. And I don't think it's that natural anymore. What do you say about that?
The dietitian or the dietetics definition of the Mediterranean diet is like a low meat diet with grains and legumes, like you're saying. But when I come here, I eat meat every single day. Like maybe once or twice a month, I have lentils for dinner. There's this dish called mjadra. It's like a lentil dish here. It's very good. You eat it with like rice or and the yogurt, like the Greek yogurt, we call labneh. It's very delicious. But I'd say like it's very meat heavy, if anything. Like I eat a lot of raw meats, the goat liver. We have the like grilled meat, that the tahu. It's probably similar, like you would just in Israel, so you probably had a lot of it too. What I've noticed that's changed recently with like more fast food coming is a lot more processed foods, and some restaurants now, like many restaurants, are using sunflower oil instead of olive oil. For like the original recipes always call for olive oil. For instance, there's this garlic sauce, it's called toum, that everyone dips their chicken in, and it should be olive oil, and they're using sunflower oil instead.
Probably that's a question of price, right? It's so much less pricey to use sunflower oil. I mean, because everybody likes olive oil, the taste of olive oil so much more than sunflower oil. So I don't think that's a question of, it's about price.
Sure. Yeah, they're saving money.
Yeah, saving money. Okay, so the Mediterranean diet, can you have Lebanese food in the US?
I personally prefer it here. I mean, there are some, like I have family members in the US that can cook good Lebanese food. My uncles, they have restaurants in Pennsylvania. But yeah, they make some good food, but I think the ingredients are different sometimes, like the flour isn't the same, the water is not the same, so never really tastes the same to me.
No, of course. So
And they
in
don't have the
addition.
pressure that we use in the salads here. Like that's, you have to bring them over, put in your garden and plant.
Yeah, it's something d completely different for sure. So I mean, nutrition is a very broad and polarized field, right? How would you describe your approach, and how do you apply it to the people that follow you and your clients?
Yeah, so like I'd say like now that I am doing private nutrition consultations in addition to corporate, my corporate clients are very different. Like they're like just your typical American, eating. They think they're eating healthy because they were told that the food pyramid, follow the food pyramid, and they're not sure why they're gaining weight. That's 100, like 99% of my clients from the corporate world. My private clients like are more niche. They're already like eating really well, most of them. Like they're already like animal based, most of them. They just want to like figure out what's wrong. It might be like a hormonal something like really small that they wouldn't have figured out on their own. So I personally like haven't seen much polarization with my clients when it comes to us figuring out a solution for them. But I know what you're saying, like in the community, it is very polarized. Like, oh, carnivore, like you shouldn't eat, or it's like so extreme and rigid. Like you have to be so low carb, you can never touch sugar. Like, it can be very extreme. Even the people that are anti-PUFA, which like I would fall under that category. Like I'm not scared of sugar, like per se, I still actually here I probably eat more sugar than I do anywhere.
In what kind of sugar? Is it in the fruit that you eat or dates or?
Fruit for sure, fruit of
Yeah.
course, like crushed figs, and they have, you know, I have a pear right here just in case I get hungry. I haven't had lunch yet. So the fruit is delicious here. It's like from the garden. Like my
It
grandmother had
is.
a garden full of and trees full of fruits. So I'm really thankful for that. But I also put sugar in my coffee, and I drink soda sometimes here. So I and the desserts. Like I don't say no to the desserts here. Ice cream, the frozen lemonade when it's so hot out, you need like something to hydrate other than water. And I honestly lose weight when I'm here. Like I eat whatever I want. Obviously I avoid HOFAs when I can. If I'm going out to dinner, there's probably HOFA in it if I eat some sauce or something. But I'm still careful. I order like grilled meat without that. And I usually vet out restaurants to be like, what are you using in this? What are the ingredients? So yeah, that's how I've been doing it. But
So when it comes to weight management, because I see that you are into weight management with your followers, with your clients, how would you explain weight loss to your audience? And what is it required to lose weight, or at least to stay, not to gain weight?
So there's weight loss, and then there's what I like to focus more on body composition, because anyone can just like lose weight if they eat less, but maybe they're not really learning, maybe they're not improving their body fat and lean muscle. So I always like to focus on quality of foods, like what you're eating, nutrients, and you know where you're getting your protein from, where you're getting your fat from. Like those are really important. Where you're getting your carbs from, like there's certain carbs that are better than others. So educating clients on that is, or you know, my community on that is a lot, it goes a lot further than just being very rigid with, oh, like you know, you should have this amount of carbs and this amount of protein every day. Like that's not as sustainable long term. But focusing on specific nutrients, where you're getting them from, the quality of the foods is definitely more sustainable. And obviously,
Satiety, right? Satiety is
yeah,
important.
satiety is really important. If you're eating processed foods, you're gonna like end up being leptin resistant.
Yeah,
Like you're not,
you
your body's
still
not gonna know
crave
what's going
more.
on. You're still hungry, especially because of the PUFAs. They actually cause leptin resistance. Like your body doesn't know when it's full. So if you're focusing on quality, you'll be more in tune with your body's like own like physiological signs of hunger, satiety. You won't be eating all the time. You'll eat when you're hungry. You won't eat when you're not hungry. Like it's, you know, into like following your own intuition. So I think if you build that up, it becomes pretty like easy over time. Obviously, there's cases where like hormones are like a low thyroid or something like hormonal cortisol that's interfering with fat loss. So that sometimes needs to be addressed. But in most, you know, most cases, like a little can go a long way, especially if like they're eating, you know, processed food every day, and then they're eating, you know, some steak and some healthy fruit, like local seasonal fruit, eggs, raw milk, raw dairy, those kinds of things. So it makes a big difference when you switch your diet like that.
So you mentioned raw dairy. Dairy in general has been demonized the last I know not just decades but last year. So what do you think is the actual problem with the lactose intolerance, or do you think that everyone should avoid dairy?
There are people that may not do as well with dairy, and that could depend on like their ancestry, like where they're from in the world. Like obviously, like Europeans, Northern Europeans have a higher tolerance for dairy, like because of what their ancestors ate. I do think that there's forms of dairy that are more tolerable, especially if you're getting the milk from like maybe a different animal, maybe not necessarily a cow or even the A2 cows. It's, you know, less inflammatory for some people. But so if, like, for instance, like yogurt, the lactose sugar, it's a sugar. So some people don't have the enzyme that breaks it down, the lactase enzyme. So that's why they have this lactose intolerance. But like for instance, like yogurt, there's less of that sugar because it's converted to lactose. So there's ways of eating preparing dairy that make it more tolerable for some people. And some people might need to avoid it at certain points in their life. And some certain points in their life, they might be able to tolerate it. It just really depends on your, you have to change your diet, like pretty much, like I'd say, depending on your lifestyle, where you're living, your stress levels, like you might have to adjust it. So, but then
That's
again, with
true.
the dairy controversy, I'm not like so against dairy. I like it myself. I prefer goat milk to cow's milk. Works a little better for me, I find. So maybe it's because I'm Lebanese, so and there's a lot of goats here, so.
I prefer goat milk as well, raw goat milk. That's what I prefer. And also having raw dairy, it's easy to digest, right? Because it contains the enzymes that digest the lactase,
Yeah,
right?
the proteins haven't been denatured from like the pasteurization, so it's easier for some people to do the raw versus pasteurized. And of course,
Right.
all of the minerals and that are still in the raw.
Exactly. So how easy is it to get raw dairy in Lebanon?
Pretty, you could just contact anyone with a goat that has a dairy goat.
Okay, so it's not prohibited. You can buy it.
There's really not much prohibitions in Lebanon. Like, there's not much regulation, so yeah, it's not an issue.
And in the US is different, right?
So it depends on the state you live in the U.S. Like, they don't apparently, like, the interstate sale is not permitted. Like, it's very shady. This is one of the reasons why I moved to Pennsylvania, is because of the raw milk. That's why I love it there, honestly, because the Amish can deliver milk to your home.
Okay, so they can actually sell.
Yeah.
Amish can sell raw dairy
In Pennsylvania, like in every
in
state's different.
Pennsylvania. All
California, you
right.
can buy milk at the grocery store, raw milk at what's that store called? Erewhon grocery store.
Okay, yeah. That's crazy. It's still some states. I mean, in Europe, it's not permitted at all.
I thought
You,
it was
it's.
in some places.
I don't think so. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's really hard to find it, and you need to know the farmer to get it. But it's. I think it's crazy that. I mean, for example, in Europe, marijuana, cannabis is not legal. Still, I mean, it is legal in a few countries, but still, raw milk is not. I find it really crazy.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, drugs are, I think in some states it's easier to buy drugs, like, well, I forget which state it was, than it is to buy raw. Yeah, that is silly.
So,
Twisted world.
what about I saw that you are actually into the hormonal cycles, female hormonal cycles, and how different, because they are so different from the main from the male hormonal cycle, right? Ours is like from morning to the evening, while you have your 30 days cycle. So what is your standpoint here? How do you think that nutrition and physical activity should be approached by women?
Yeah, so the 28-day cycle, like you are going to want to change your nutrient intake over the course of your cycle. Like leading up to your period, you're going to want to actually eat more. The luteal phase, like right before the menstruation, you're going to want to actually eat more nutrients. Your body needs more. Your basal metabolic rate goes up, so you're burning more. And this is, your body's preparing. Well, it thinks it's preparing for a baby. It doesn't know that you're not necessarily pregnant. So, it's your body's smart. It needs more nutrients, so it makes you hungrier. This is why people feel like they have more cravings around that time. So, it is best to be prepared. I would say, like, eating more protein, red meat is good leading up, because of the iron loss. You want to make sure you're getting minerals, so you can really get a lot of that from. That's a personal thing that I would work on with people. Because everyone's different. Some people tolerate more meat than others. But definitely you're going to want to change based on your fluctuating hormones. You're going to want to change your food intake for sure.
Depending on where you are in the month,
And even the
that
exercise, like you're going to want to change that up as well. Like you might not want to do such a severe workout, up to in the luteal phase. Like you might want to do something more like yoga or Pilates, something like a little bit less intense, just to conserve energy and things like that. And
I want to.
like even people that women that overtrain actually and undereat can lose their they can have like irregular periods. So yeah, it definitely does play a role.
And when it comes to stress, testosterone, we have seen a decline the last decades, right? It's gone down a lot. How can you raise testosterone through your life habits?
Oh yeah, like there's a lot actually that can be done. I would say for men, like look at what you're using, like the products. There's a lot of endocrine disruptors and these like just everyday things people use that they don't think about. The phthalates that are in all of the like the shampoos and the shaving cream and just body lotion, things like that. Like I would just keep it simple, honestly. And for food, things like oysters, meat, like they have zinc, getting the sun, you want to get sunlight, vitamin D, and you want to eat like cholesterol, like foods that have cholesterol, because testosterone is, our hormones are made from cholesterol. So avoiding cholesterol is,
Animal fats are really important, right?
like eggs and steak, and those are all, and avoiding the PUFAs and plastics as much as possible. Like plastic is a really big problem in Lebanon right now, actually. Like this is one thing I've been really passionate about talking about because it's really bad. Like it's too hot for this, and it's the sun is way too strong to have this much plastic everywhere, because as soon as the sun hits the plastic, that's like there's BPA and estrogen just like everywhere. So that's a big thing to avoid is plastic and PUFAs. Sunscreen
Also,
also really bad.
right? Sunscreens are really bad. Not just for the chemicals that found in them, but that you also you avoid this the sun to hit your skin, right? And that's so important.
Oh yeah, you're
To be
blocking out
outdoors.
sun. Obviously, if you're in the sun all day and you don't want to, be so tan or burnt, like maybe a little bit of zinc, but make sure that there's no inactive ingredients that are endocrine disruptors, because it's not just about what's the SPF, like whatever the ingredient is, the active ingredient. It's also the other stuff they put in, like the inactive ingredient. So it's what you're using on a daily basis is really important.
You could use actually sunscreens based on tallow.
Yeah, tallow and zinc. I do sometimes. I haven't even worn sunscreen, to be honest, this whole week.
No.
I've been here for a month and I'm not burning at all. Like I really barely burn this summer.
What about sunscreens in Lebanon? Do people use sunscreens?
Not really. I mean,
No.
like very rarely. They use a lot of oils though, like tanning oil, like without sunscreen. Some people have like they put it on their face, but I don't see like people spraying stuff like on the beaches here like they do in America. The other thing I would say like to boost testosterone is having like normal sleep patterns, like going to bed at a normal time, waking up early with the sun, looking at the sun, exercising, like weight training. Like for men, it's pretty easy to like change their hormones with
It
lifestyle.
is, right?
You just have to know what to avoid and be consistent. That's it.
Also, if you live in the US, in the northern part of the US, even more in winter time, it's not that easy to get right sun that part of the year. It's tougher. You need to go to Florida once in a time, once in a while.
I go on vacation. You have to be in the sun. Vitamin D is not enough. Even if you're taking it, just so that's another controversial issue. Even if you're taking vitamin D, I still don't think that's a good substitute for the sun.
No.
Sun is much more than that. I would call it a hormone at this point. Hormone D, not vitamin.
Right, hormone D. Yeah, I find it interesting and fascinating how you offer education on the underlying problem of the shrinking human jaw, compared to the wide jaw that we that our ancestors had. Could you explain more in detail how what your take on this?
Oh yeah. So I've had jaw problems like as long as I can remember, since I was in high school. I had clicking and like the orthodontists, the doctors, oral surgeons, they really had no direction for me. I mean, it was a waste of my time. They wasted so much time. They could have done a lot more when I was a teenager versus now. And like I just knew that there was something missing, so I kind of just did my own research. I found Weston A. Price. He wrote a book about this, and he traveled the world, observed all the indigenous cultures, and noticed that, you know, the indigenous the tribes were eating like real food, like no processed foods, mostly animal foods, and just whatever was in their local area. And they had like these beautiful wide jaws. Their faces were like really well structured, good bone structure, chiseled jawlines. You know, everything that the plastic surgery industry sells right now is because there's a reason for that. There's a deep, like we're hardwired to want to look that way. That's healthy. That means like we're fertile. You know, we're
We're attracted to that look, right?
right. So I don't even blame like all these people that want these procedures because it's like, well, there's a reason why it looks good. It's because it means there it symbolizes health. So yeah, it de the nutrition definitely plays a role. But also the tongue posture from a young age to support, you know, your structure and your bones. The maxilla bone that sits here is the one that really influences everything. So if someone doesn't have proper nasal breathing, maybe they had allergies, so they opened their mouth, they were mouth breathing, that causes like bone loss here. Your face doesn't grow correctly in the forward position. You have, you know, problems all your life. You can even have metabolic issues from it. Like you have high blood pressure, you have sleep apnea, which cuts years off of your life. So it's not just about looks. You know, function is form, is beauty, is health. Really, like all of it goes together.
So if you've been a mouth breather all your life and you're 55 years old, can you still change that?
Yeah, I actually there's things that can be done, like mouth tape. I can send you a good a link for that. There's exercises you can do with your mouth. Like I have another product for that. That's from a German doctor. It's called Face Former. I actually started using a HomeoBlock appliance to help assist with that. In addition to like everything else I'm doing, you could take vitamins. Like I'd say K2 is really important. Like if you're not getting into your diet, that's a really important one. Making sure you get vitamin D from the sun. Collagen is good. So you're eating a lot of collagen, bone broth, things like that. Like more ancestral diets, more like real healing foods.
All those nutrients that you just mentioned, they come from an animal-based diet, right?
Basically, yeah. If you need to take more K2, then that's fine. But yeah, most everything comes from an animal-based diet. Absolutely. Except for magnesium, like you still have to really potassium, you kind of have to eat more fruit, potato.
Fruits.
Yeah. I think magnesium isn't not a bad idea to take like supplements, like electrolytes in your water, because I don't think there's enough magnesium in the food, even if you're eating like super healthy. I don't think it's
So
quite enough.
you take supplements for that?
There's an electrolyte, yeah, I forget the name. Yeah, I could send you the link for that. But it's just easy. You just put in your water. But yeah, the shrinking jaw, that's a big problem. Like I see people that are like they just have no jaw. Like they're like
Really?
how are you breathing? It's scary. I mean, how are you functioning? Because your brain's not getting enough oxygen while you're sleeping. Your organs aren't getting enough.
No.
You can't heal.
So it's important to chew, right? It's important to chew what you eat. Not you should not like switch your food for smoothies, at least not all the time. Even kids, like they should chew their food. It's important.
Especially from a young age, like yeah, chewing really develops the muscles here, which pulls the bone. It really does help. And I think because our diet has become so soft and easy and calorie dense, like we're doing the opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. Like we're getting because of like maybe it's pureed baby food or something or whatever it is. But yeah, before baby food, before processed food, before formula, there was obviously a lot more chewing and getting those like muscles and bones worked. Absolutely. Especially
I've
because they were
also
eating harder foods like meats and with ligaments. That's the other thing. Like you don't want to just eat steak, like muscle meats. You want like the gelatinous meats that, you know, even ground beef, like the expensive cuts, honestly, like I used to love them, but honestly, I prefer the cheaper cuts that are more nutritious in my opinion. So, and you save money.
And you save money. I've also understood that when you have, for example, corn, wheat, rice, you can get congestion because you actually don't tolerate that kind of food, and that also makes it worse, right? The it's impossible to actually breathe through your nose when you have congestion.
Exactly. So yeah, you could change your diet depending on what, like some people are allergic to certain foods, not just allergic, it could be like less severe than an allergy, like an intolerance. Definitely cause swelling here in the nose. So avoiding
And
those
then you
foods,
start breathing through your mouth, right?
right? Because you have to breathe, otherwise you die. So the most important nutrient.
So what about infant formulas? Do you think they are good? Should we try to switch them for other kinds of liquid nutrition?
Yeah, I mean, the ideal, like breast milk is obviously ideal for humans, for babies. There's probably not a lot of baby formulas right now that are free of, like, I've seen the ingredients that just, it's just like, it's just so many ingredients. It's worse than a candy bar. There's like
It's
sugar.
horrible.
Yeah. So they have to add all these vitamins because that's what you would get from breast milk.
Still synthetic vitamins and it's very little natural in those products, but you're right. There are very few alternatives on the market because it's kind of a monopoly, and the big ones they have 99% of the market share. So there should be something better, but still there isn't.
Yeah, and it's like you can't really always substitute for cow's milk because of the protein to fat ratio is different than breast milk. There's too much protein in cow's milk, so compared to breast milk. Well, I've heard some people like during the shortage, like there was some recommendations for goat milk.
For my babies here at home, we actually use raw goat's milk. When Okay, so just going back to the nose breathing again, because it's something that I actually know so little about. I read that the When you do nose breathing, you get the intake of nitric oxide, right? And that is so important for us. Could you explain to our listeners what is it that is so important with nitric oxide? Why do we need that?
Yeah, it's a vasodilator. But the other thing I wanted to bring up with the nasal breathing is that you're actually taking less volume versus like if you're mouthing. So when you breathe through your mouth, you're taking more volume but less oxygen. Versus through your nose, it's more oxygen but less volume. So when you, I don't know if you've heard of Buteyko breathing. Have you heard of that
No.
breathing method? It's actually really interesting. So if anyone's congested, they can look up how to do this Buteyko breathing method, and it helps to clear their nose if they're not like sick, and if they're not like they don't have like a physical obstruction. Obviously, a physical obstruction like might need to be surgically or medically assisted in some way. But if you're just like stuffy from the environment, you can clear your nose with the buccal breathing. You basically just like hold your breath, and that basically opens up the nasal passageways and teeth. So I'll definitely recommend that for anyone that is ever congested.
So how do you actually teach your clients or to breathe in the right way? Could you do like video online sessions? Do you need to meet them face to face? How does that work?
I don't really do that so much with clients, to be honest. I'm more just passionate about that overall, the jaw and how it affects, how your breathing affects your jaw and vice versa, and how like your physical appearance is related to your health. When I meet with my clients, we're mostly talking about just developing a healthy lifestyle, for them specifically. They're not specifically concerned with their jaw necessarily. It's just part of everything.
Okay. Great. So, Lexi, is there anything that you think that we've missed now that we're about to wrap it up? Something related to your expertise that you would like to talk about?
The one thing I wanted to mention is I just edited my friend's book. It's called I Hungry. Her name is Ruth Katz, and it's a book of basically how she helped her kid, her two sons grow into strong men. She taught them nutrition from an early age. They helped, she made cooking and healthy eating fun. So there's a lot of fun recipes. If parents want to start, using that with their kids, because there's so much processed food right now, and kids are just like targets for all of that advertising. So I helped her edit it.
Interesting. Where is it easier to be healthy in general, in Lebanon or in the US?
It depends because here I, to be honest, I eat dinner late at night, so that's like, bad according to our community. I drink, which is also considered bad.
You drink alcohol.
Yeah, like every single day I go out. I can't. It's some days I just have to stay in and, just say no.
So when you go out and you drink, what do you drink? Beer, wine?
Well, mostly wine. Sometimes arak, which is like a Lebanese liquor, but it's definitely more than I do in the U.S. And but the other thing is like I'm less rigid here, which I think is actually healthier to be like a little bit more open. Except for with PUFAs, like I'm not so open about that. But I'm a little bit more open-minded here. My diet is a lot more limited in the US, and I don't go out as much. So I eat like an early dinner versus here I'm eating pretty late at night.
And I imagine you're more outdoors in Lebanon.
I'm in the sun all the time in the sea. I think that's a lot of, the health. You get a lot of your minerals through just like being in the sea. You get like the salt and
The ocean is really healthy to be close to the sea, right, on the beach. That is, it feels just very healthy.
it is. It really is. Absolutely. So I don't know where it is, where it's easier to be healthier, because here I feel like I do anything I want. I eat like ice cream when I want, and I don't gain a pound. If anything, I have to take my clothes to the tailor, like again, because they're big on me.
Really?
Oh yeah, I don't know if it's like the sun. I don't know what it is. I work out less here too, so I don't know. Yeah, I dance more. I dance more here.
You dance more, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Lexi, for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you for your
Please send
time.
me the, I'd love to know more about the book that you just edited.
Yes, I'll send you about the book, and there was a few links for the magnesium and the ex for the exercising the jaw.
Great. So where can people find you?
On Instagram, I post there the most. So I'm at holistic_LEXI.
Great.
And I have a website, nutrition, intuition.com, but with a two.
With a
So
two,
it's
yeah. We'll put that actually on this post, on this podcast. We'll
perfect.
include that. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Thank
Have a
you.
great weekend. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Hunger for Change podcast. I also wanted to take a moment to talk about Naturally, my brand of healthy food products. This is why we worked so hard to make products that are delicious and also good for you. My personal favorites are the cheesy snacks, chocolates, and cacao hazelnut spread. As well as many cool snacks to be released this year. You can head over to our website naturally.com and it will take you to our online store. I will leave all of these links in the description anyway so that you can find them.